So I know we missed out on our anthem this week, but I'm sure we'll be looking forward to having you back. Cohen was trying to convince me to do a solo of Ave Maria instead, but I didn't get enough time to do my vocal warm-ups, and so maybe another week. I'm very excited to introduce Jim Snell. Many of you know him. I know that he continues to have a great relationship with many of us here through camp, but also he and his family were longtime members. He grew up in the church. I think it's really wonderful. He has a long life of teaching and service, and he is now a seminary student at Methesco Methodist Seminary of Ohio up in Delaware, and so he's getting to share some more of his gifts and ministry with us this morning. I'm excited to listen with all of you, and so Jim, I invite you to come up. Thanks so much for being here.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I have a lot of rich memories having grown up in this church. I should provide context for my speaking today. I have a background in the social and behavioral sciences as a college teacher. My PhD is in rhetoric, and I was blessed to have a topic that is, on one hand, theoretical, something I can make a living doing, you know, teaching, but I also found a lot of personal relevance as far as understanding how influence works in our lives directly and indirectly. And so you'll see this coming out in what I'm talking about today. In the scripture readings, we hear from the books of Esther and John, and I want to do some excerpts from both books, because I want to kind of do a deep dive into some aspects of each of the readings, again, focusing on notions of influence. Drawing from Esther, on a particular night, the king could not sleep. He gave orders to bring the book that chronicled memorable deeds, and the book was read to the king. The book revealed how Mordecai had spoken with two of the king's eunuchs. Afterward, Mordecai returned to the king's gate. Soon after, a wife from within the community proclaimed, "If Mordecai truly is of the Jewish people, you will not overcome him, but will surely fall before him." So in this reading, you can ascertain that Mordecai has special standing in the community because of his linkage through the Jewish faith and ultimately with God. So there's kind of a soft awareness that she brings to light in explaining that. On a parallel vein, excerpting from the book of John, in speaking with his disciples, Jesus said, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so it will be even more fruitful. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. I am the true vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing." So this even takes it a step further. We see this role of influence where Jesus proclaims being, you know, a trustworthy entity in their lives, and the disciples embrace that and celebrate that. Now, I think a question here is, what does that have to do with us in our lives today, this idea of influence as we see it in the scriptures? I think in the biblical times, life was more simple, more direct. There wasn't that much vying for their attention like we would have today, that we have so many things coming at us through the new communication technologies, just the fast-paced life that we live in. That we kind of have to break through the clutter. Certainly, within this age of modernization, you would recognize the phrase that just about anything is possible in this day and age. That if you can imagine it, there's probably an engineer somewhere kind of conjuring, you know, how it might bring it to life. As Rob mentioned, I'm in the seminary up at Methesco, Methodist Theological School in Ohio. And when I interviewed there, for admittance to the program. It was a lengthy process. And a question I was anticipating but never came up was, aren't you kind of old to be entering the ministry? But it never did. Nobody asked it. And as I was leaving, I was putting on my coat and I was talking with the director of admissions. And I said, how did you not ask that? And he said, about 30 years ago, because it would have been a topic, something we would have brought up. But he said, in this day and age, the way life is, we have all kinds of people coming through our doors at different stations in life. So again, this idea of change, as we see it both, within our own personal lives and the society overall, that all kinds of things that never would have gone on before, not only go on today, but with regularity. I'm the family genealogist for both sides of my family. I'm a Schnell, but locally I'm from my mother's side of the family, who are Sanduskis. And I was looking through an old Gahanna Enterprise, the local newspaper that I used to be a newsboy for delivering. But anyway, I was looking for an article about our family, but I saw an article about, this is like from the mid-1960s, but it was about the Gahanna Lincoln Lions marching band going to march in the Orange Bowl parade in Florida. And they had just left on the trip, and it described it as a once-in-a-lifetime trip to Florida, okay? Which I look at now, and I think, what an odd phrase. But at that time, I remember what the community was like then. And, people didn't go to Florida. A big trip was Lake Erie. But at that time, that was, travel has just evolved in the last 50, 60 years tremendously. So life changes that way. Similarly, my brother, who's retired from the ministry now, I remember about 35 years ago, he went to Israel, and he came back with pictures and stories of, the Holy Land. And I just found it fascinating that you could walk where Jesus walked. You could go to Bethlehem, you could go to Nazareth. And I was so taken with it. A couple of years later, I went on the same tour in the Holy Land, and it was really neat to go, again, walk where Jesus walked, where the disciples were, and so much history, evolved. And then years later, after my son was born, he was a young teenager, I took him over. We went on another tour, Holy Land tour, and took him around. And I was just taken with this, in that in my youth, I just would have never conceptualized of such a thing. A few years later, I went back, not even on a tour, but I just got a room in Nazareth. Okay. Then I got a room in Old Jerusalem. I took a public bus over to Bethlehem. So again, how we know things. I mean, as a child, the whole Israel was almost like Mars or something. It was some other place, some other time. But in this day and age we live in, so much changes with how we wrestle and comprehend the world around us. And with the new communication technologies, it just spins it even in other directions. When I was in Israel, I had a video camera. Bill took a regular photo camera. I had a video cam and shot video and posted it on YouTube while I was there. Okay, and this isn't anything magical anymore. A lot of people do this, but if you put in YouTube input Jim Schnell Israel and Jim Schnell Bethlehem, you'll see what I posted from over there. I did it for use in my classes. But it really just underscored for me how we know things, how we negotiate has changed tremendously. So just about anything is possible these days, or a lot more than used to be. But with those gains, there's a counterbalance of things we lose. So just about anything is possible. At the same time, not as much is certain. Things that we could count on as being certain in my youth really aren't quite as certain as they were. So with everything we kind of gain, we also kind of lose something. It kind of comes at a cost. Recent times, sociologists point to this, that we have a breakdown of social institutions in this country, that the concept of religion, church, education, the institution of marriage, Right now, roughly 50% of marriages end in divorce. We have a lot of change these days, so our structures are kind of coming under redefinition. We have things going on that we never would have conceptualized of in my youth. We have something I have no memory of ever happening. Today we have people who go into populated areas and with guns and kill people who they have no association with, have no grievance with. Okay, and this kind of became more common on a larger scale, I'd say within the last 20 years or so. But I study language norms. And we not only does this happen, but it happens enough that we have a name for it, active shooters. Okay, that when I work in government agencies today, this comes up. I mean, there'll be, you know, what to do if there's an active shooter. And I thought, wow, I had no conception of this in my younger years. Similarly, in my role teaching in universities, I saw in the Chronicle of Higher Education this past week that one third of all undergraduate students have anxiety to the point that it impacts negatively their ability to study. Okay, and I think back to my college days, and it just wasn't like that. Okay, on any scale that I was familiar with. As was mentioned, Rob mentioned, I grew up in this church. I grew up in Gahanna, and my family goes back six generations in this area. So when I grew up in Gahanna, I had a strong sense of not only growing up here, but of my heritage being here, that these are my roots. Okay, these are my people, that I'm from here. Similarly, I grew up in this church. I was born, baptized, raised in this church. Had a wonderful time in this church. And I don't mean that we just belonged kind of thing, but we were here like every week. You know, I got those annual pins in my, for lapel pins to connote that. Very active in the youth program, had a wonderful time. Mrs. Selby, with the choir. I mean, it was just a whole package there. But anyway, with that, I have this awareness. I really embrace it, growing up with such a secure childhood because of those things that were certain. The schools were certain. Just so much of life was there. It wasn't as exciting as it is today. It's so much going on. But it was just a happy childhood, something you'd see in a Norman Rockwell painting. But anyway, when I came time, I got married and had a child, I wanted my son to have a similar kind of security. So I was real happy to be able to raise him in this area. Okay, we ended up moving out to New Albany as he got older. But I found that it was just a pipe dream to think he would have the same kind of childhood as I did because the community had changed so much. Columbus kind of, connected to Gahanna, things grew, and we lost that smallness. And again, you gain something. There's always something gained, something lost. But anyway, it's just part of this changing of life. And I think, I didn't have the childhood my father did, so why should my son have a childhood that I did? He had his blessings in his own way. Something we're learning about up at the seminary is about something called the digital Bible, the digitized Bible. And it's basically the claim with this is that it's a now fragmented text that we used to think of the Bible as this singular entity. We would refer to the Bible. But as the Bible has become more and more digitized, people reference it through digital means, it is really seen more as a collection of individual books. And it impacts not only how we understand the Bible, but it impacts what I'm doing with you right now, how sermons are formatted. So I find this, exciting. Where does this go? With just the whole notion of religion. But to take this down kind of like, what the meanings we have in our own lives, I think about the importance of being able to recognize the true vines in our lives, because certainly we have entities that claim to be true vines in our lives, but they're really not. There are ulterior motives. And I think what we have to ultimately do, and I think we do anyway, is when something's seeking our attention, trying to get us to do something, we ask ourselves, does he or she have my best interests at heart? Okay, if you've raised a child, you know you stumbled into that. Like, how do you explain that some things are the way they are? Not all adults are to be trusted. You know, there are times you can't trust all adults. You know, and with that comes a whole parade of whys from a child. And I mean, when you explain that, ultimately, that's what I would come back down to is, you know, if it's something or somebody that has your best interest at heart, that's the kind of the litmus test. I work in teaching, and I spent 28 years over at Ohio Dominican with Tiffany was over there. But we were continually focusing on what is good teaching, because we want to define it, we want to reward it, we want to perpetuate that. And it came down to things that were really hard to define, and the big one was a teacher should care about his or her students. And if you don't really care about them, not just about their education, but them as a human being, then you're not going to be able to do much else. And that's, by the way, is when it becomes newsworthy. When a teacher violates that trust, it's especially newsworthy, because it should be unusual when that happens. So I bring this up, that, you know, this notion of recognizing true vines in our lives, being able to know what is just a vine, what's a false vine, but what is a true vine. Then you take it to the highest form, where Jesus said, I am the true vine, not just a vine, but the true vine. At the same time, I want to kind of take this full circle and point out that we can be a true vine in the lives of others. And you probably already are, without thinking about it too much. But I find it reassuring to know that God uses us as a tool in the lives of other people, in which case we are a true vine. I see Glenna King here today. 55 plus years ago, she was my Sunday school teacher. And I remember down in the old church on High Street, there was a building, a little house, across the street, where we had Sunday school up on the second floor. I have a good memory, by the way. I remember a lot of stuff from childhood. But I remember Glenna explaining the Ten Commandments to us. Okay, so I'm probably third grade, something like that. But I was old enough where I could conceptualize, okay, there are these 10 things that I'm supposed to know and live in accordance with. And I remember talking to her about, okay, you know, thou shalt not kill. I'm safe there. You know, thou shalt not steal. Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to wrestle with that a little bit. But she was able to explain this, and I remember digesting that. Well, in that role, I don't think about it as a child, but somewhere in there I know that she has my best interest at heart. Okay, she's not on the payroll to sell me something. Okay, that she's looking out for Jim Schnell. Okay, her son Bobby, he and I hung out together. We were friends. You know, that's Bobby's mom, and yeah, it's one of the moms. You know, and you know what all that, you know, carried with it. I do some work in international relief these days, and I'm particularly connected with an orphanage over in Myanmar. I spent time over in Myanmar and met this guy that had this orphanage. It's a combination orphanage school. But anyway, I'm part of this project to funnel money to them. Okay, and we get it to them through Western Union. By the way, it's really something how easy it is to transfer money to Burma. Okay, I was surprised that Western Union does. It was quite easy. But anyway, my whole concept of foreign relief, international relief, came from Glenna King. Do you remember Divinio? Divinio, he was a child, part of international relief. It was down in South America. But you had a picture of him up on the bulletin board. And I remember conceptualizing, this kid is from some other country. The money we give to God through church finds its way to that boy's family. Okay, so growing up in a church environment like this, oh yeah, the people, the true vines in my life, Yeah, I mean, they pay incredible benefits. I'm a big fan of, big proponent of church camps. I think wonderful things happen at church camps. And one of the interesting things about it is it plants seeds. So you can have a camp experience with a child, but you don't really see the payoff yet. But there are seeds that are planted and they come to fruition later. And I've worked with, the first camp I ever attended was through this church, but I've worked with other camps beyond that, and I consistently see that. But I see Donna Jernigan over here, and I remember, I think it was 2009, I spent a week with your Camp Andrew, and I see this sign back here about celebrating Camp Andrew. But in that, I saw just so strongly, I thought, wow, this is fertile soil here. Okay. And in that, you know, for spiritual growth, again, you never know where it's going to go from there. But in that, I saw, you know, Donna's directing the program, and Mike and I were there, and others. Come think of Mike Dorn was part of us, you know, down there. But the kids kind of know that. You know, they don't think through so much, I don't think, in specifics as far as who are these people. But I think it's mostly along the lines of these people have our best interest at heart. So it's an opportunity to be a true vine. My brother told me not to talk too long. So I'll kind of wind it up there. I do wish you the best, though, at recognizing true vines in your lives and that you can serve as a true vine for others. So until next time.
Yeah, I'll say thank you for that and encourage all of us to continue to find those ways together. We can see also how vines connect us, you know, temporarily in our relationships. They also connect us over time, where we can see the links, you know, 50-some years back and the ways that that continues to bear fruit. And that's a real encouragement for those types of connections that we can make with each other, with those around us, with those that may even just pass through our lives. And that's part of what we will do our best to dedicate ourselves to as we move into our time of offering whatever we have for God to bear fruit with.